First of all, I'd like to thank Dean for the invitation and for the opportunity to visit PI. It's my first time here, and I should say I like it a lot. I mean, that's a wonderful place to work. So today I'd like to present you a combinatorial problem which appears in the study of the Feynman amplitudes of a certain modified GFT model. So the talk will be divided into three parts. In the first part, essentially, I'll set notations in order to be able to state the problem. In the second part, I describe this combinatorial structure, which in the third part, I'd like to enumerate. Okay. So the first part will itself be divided into three sections. In the first section, so I speak just a little bit about group field theory, not much because most of you know way more than me, but essentially to explain why we want to modify it a little bit. And then after this modification, I show you a sketch of the computation of the Feynman amplitudes, and we'll see what we need to enumerate, well, to compute. So let me start with group field theory. So as you know, group field theory is a quantum field theory of a field here phi. It lives on d copies of a usually compactly group capital G, and a typical action is the one which is displayed here. So you have here a quadratic part with here the inverse propagator. So usually it's taken to be a trivial propagator or with closure constraint or so, we'll see. And more typical, here's the interaction part of degree d plus 1. And here, a specific kernel I'm going to describe now. So the geometric picture underlying this action is the following. To each field phi, you imagine corresponds a d minus 1 simplex. So imagine to fix IDs, we are in dimension 3, so it's a triangle. To each group element, you associate a d minus 2 simplex. So here, edges. The propagator C is supposed to glue two d minus 1 simplices, identify if you want. And this kernel K is precisely the connecting pattern of d plus 1, d minus 1 simplices to form a d simplex. So in dimension 3, four triangles bound a tetrahedron. Okay, so we'll see a picture of that just after. So a Feynman graph here is a spin foam, and its amplitude is called a spin foam model. Okay, so picture, here it is. So this is a picture of the vertex in dimension 3. So the dimension you can read in the number of strands per edges. And on the left side of the picture, you have the tetrahedron, which corresponds to this vertex. And each edge here corresponds to a facet of the tetrahedron. And the strands from one edge to another corresponds to an edge which is shared, sorry, by two triangles. So a graph you get with such theory could be that one vertex, two edges. Okay, so far so good, except that usually it's difficult really to make sense of such a graph because it's let's say, it doesn't encode enough information to attach to such a graph a full D complex. Above two dimensions, it's becoming hard. So let's phrase it differently. So with such gluing rules, you can get quite singular situation. Well, let's say quite singular situation. So for example, you would identify vertices of the same simplex. So that wouldn't be so much of a problem, except that there is not really information in the graph to know what to do. For example, with the edge between the two vertices you identify. So there is at some point a choice which is not canonical, and we'd like to avoid that. So a way to avoid that is to put colors in the story. So we'll see that we'll have a very well-defined D complex in any dimension, and also that it's not too much of a restriction. Okay, so what is a color graph? So a K-colored graph, this is first a bipartite graph, which is endowed with a proper edge coloring with K colors. So said differently, so it's bipartite, so you probably know what it means, but I repeat it. It means that there is a partition of the set of vertices into two classes, and edges go only from one class to the other. So meaning you can put black and white dots, and edges are in between black and white, always. Then it's K regular, so the degree of each vertex is always the same. Here it's four. It's a four-colored graph. And at each vertex, all the colors are represented. Okay? Okay, so this is a four-colored graph. And during the talk, you will also meet colored graph without colors, but with numbers that they are the same. Okay, so it's not much of a constraint to be colorable if you are already bipartite and regular, because then it's automatic, you're colorable. Then I will show you in a few slides that you can associate to such a graph a proper d-dimensional cell complex, which is usually, well, okay, as a proper cell complex. And also one knows what kind of topological spaces it represents, but what is the class of topological spaces. So this is a result of Rezvan. So each such graph is dual to a so-called normal pseudo-manifold. I'm going to say, next slide. Okay, so what is a pseudo-manifold? So basically, a pseudo-manifold is a manifold with singularities. So in particular, it may be a manifold. So a typical example is the pinched torus. But the pinched torus is not normal. Okay? So this is a kind of recursive definition. So a normal pseudo-manifold is such that the boundary of the neighborhood of each of its points is itself a pseudo-manifold. So if you look at the axioms for pseudo-manifold, in dimension one, there is only one closed pseudo-manifold, which is S1. Okay, so meaning in dimension two, the neighborhood of the points will be disks. Okay, so it's clear it's gonna be surfaces, two-dimensional surfaces. So only classified by the genus, okay? So in one dimension, in two dimension, normal pseudo-manifolds are manifolds. In three dimension, then you can have pseudo-manifold with boundary bounded by a two-dimensional surface. So it's not anymore a two-sphere as in a manifold, but it may be a torus with one, two, three, etc. handles. Okay. So you get all manifold with a colored graph. So that's a theorem.
You get all normal?
No, all manifolds. Yeah. Normal.
All normal pseudo-manifolds? Are you sure that the graph?
Yeah. You get.
Pseudo-manifold,
yeah. I would say so. I think so. I'm not. I'm not sure if you can design normal pseudo manifold that you cannot represent by a colored graph. I don't think so, because the definition of a normal pseudo manifold is really a certain complex of simplices with a few properties, and I'm almost sure it's 1-to-1, but I don't know. What I'm sure is 1-to-1 is that any piecewise linear manifold is dual to a colored graph. So you won't miss any piecewise linear manifold. Okay, so as I said, dimension 2, each normal pseudo manifold is a manifold. So in higher dimension, you could ask, can I know if a pseudo manifold is itself a manifold? So it's easy in dimension 3 because you just have to check that the boundary of each point, the neighborhood of each point, is a three ball. So its boundary is a two sphere. And recognizing a two sphere is something easy. It's just combinatorics. Okay, so that you can do. But of course, in dimension 4, you should recognize what is a three sphere. And it's a much harder problem, as you know. So I'd like to mention this line of research called GEM for graph encoded manifold. So it took place in the 70s and in the 80s. So for example, this guy was part of this project. And it aimed at using this using the colored graph to tackle the classification of three manifolds. Obviously, they failed. But they developed a whole technology and a great dictionary between topology, algebraic topology, and colored graph theory, which is quite interesting, I should say. So they had a conjecture. So they had in three dimensions, they had a conjecture of an algorithm to classify homeomorphism classes of three manifolds. Okay, but they were never able to prove that it really classifies. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, what did I want to say? So now I promised to show you what is the decomplex associated to a colored graph. So for this, I need another definition. So definition of what people call bubbles. So they are just special subgraphs of a colored graph. So you fix a colored graph, for example, in dimension D. So it's a D plus one colored graph. We'll see the correspondence. And the key, a K bubble of colors I1, IK, is just you erase in gamma all the colors which are not in I1, IK. Okay, you get a graph. It may be disconnected. And each connected component is called a K bubble of colors I1, IK. So here is an example. So here is gamma, the graph we saw earlier. Here it's a free bubble of color red, green, blue. So it turns out, so I just erased the black edges. It turns out it's connected, so there is only one. Another example is two bubbles. So I chose blue, black. So there are two bubbles of colors blue, black. You can easily see that two bubbles are always cycles with edges of alternating colors. And usually we call them faces. And this name will be, we'll see that it's chosen on purpose, let's say.
Your graph allows multiple edges between vertices?
As you can see. No, because it wouldn't be properly colored. But you can also have non-bipartite colored graph, and then they represent non-orientable pseudo manifolds. But I stick with orientable case, so they are bipartite and properly edge colored. So it prevents from loops. Okay, so what is the cell complex associated to this? So in each dimension from 0 to D, so you have, of course, a D plus 1 color graph. So you take C sub K to be the free abelian group generated by the K bubbles. Okay, and now I have to tell you what is the boundary operator in each dimension. But, well, it's just the, well, you could have guessed this form. You just erase one color at a time, okay, and you alternate the signs. And what you can check is actually that it's really a differential complex. And of course, as soon as you have a chain complex like that, you can define its homology. And that's, as usual, the quotient of the kernel of the boundary over the image of the boundary before, let's say. So cycles over boundaries. Hmm? I forgot to say that if you need me to say something or if you want to ask a question, do not hesitate. Huh? Because we're going to speak about homology afterwards. So, okay, so now I have graphs which are true D complexes. We know that they are dual to pseudo manifolds. So now I'm going to show you a colored GFT, which precisely has those colored graphs as Feynman graphs. And for today, it's a modification of the Bulatov-Ogori GFT. So as you know, it mimics gravity in three dimensions. And so it's a GFT. So in particular, it's defined on D copies of a compact Lie group, a general compact Lie group here. And we are imposing the closure constraint, namely left translation.
I think you said it, but I missed it. From every colored graph, you get a pseudo-manifold.
Yeah, true. A normal pseudo-manifold, yeah.
What?
Anyway, not all manifolds, but not all pseudo-manifolds. They are normal, let's say.
You don't get all the
pseudo-manifolds? No, not all of them. They should be normal. Yeah, if you want, I can repeat the definition of normal, but it means that the boundary of the neighborhood of each point is itself a pseudo manifold. So it's recursively defined. Okay. Yeah. Interrupt me whenever you want. Okay, so here's the action. So you have here a trivial propagator, let's say identity. It's, oh, sorry, I forgot the point. The point is that you have now a bunch of D plus one fields, okay? And they are bearing a color index, C. So the quadratic part is diagonal in the colors, and it's trivial, but do not forget that the fields have to satisfy this constraint. And essentially, the interaction part is exactly the same kernel as before, so as to mimic the gluing of simplices in order to do higher dimensional ones. And now you have the real part and the direct part and the conjugate part here. Okay, so looking at its Feynman graphs, first, each edge bear D strands, of course, because I have D arguments here. They are bipartite, so that's clear because a phi can only contract to a phi bar, and you have pure phi and pure phi bar vertices. Okay, so let's say you choose a white vertex for phi and black vertex for phi bar, so it's bipartite. It's clearly D plus one regular, okay, because I have D plus one colors here. And it comes with a proper edge coloring. Okay? Just look at the index of the field. So it looks like a color graph, except that it's stranded. But it's not a big deal because actually the color encodes the whole structure of strands here. So said differently, the face, so the paths of strands are characterized by two colors. So for example, this one down is a phase 1-4. So 1, 4, 1. And if you would continue, it would only connect to an edge colored 4. Okay, so if you just look at that graph, you can completely reconstruct this one. Okay, so it's really bijective. So we have now a quantum field theory with Feynman graphs, which are really decomplexes. And we want to look at the Feynman amplitudes of those graphs. So in this slide, I try to sketch all the steps you need to go from the action to a proper expression for the amplitude. Just for you to know that to see if that the result is quite plausible, let's say. But I'm not going to do the computation. So you have the closure constraint that you can translate into a propagator, which takes this form. And the presence of these delta function lead to divergences in the amplitude because they are not independent. So you'll get delta of 0 at some point. So you want to regularize them, as usual in quantum field theory. And a convenient way to do that is to use it kernel regularization. And so the limit we'll be interested in is tau to 0. So we put the same tau on all the lines, all the strands, actually. OK, then this it kernel enjoys a very nice convolution property. Essentially, if you perform this integral, you get the same form, except that the parameter is the sum of the two parameters in the integrand. And if you define capital N tau to be essentially 1 over square root of tau, so the small tau limit is a large N limit. And the amplitude rewrites like this. So you have an overall divergent factor here with a completely explicit degree of divergence. What is K? Yeah, it's a number which depends on dimension and on the number of vertices that I haven't written, but I can give you the expression if you would.
Does this factor, this factor doesn't come from the
field? Yeah, true.
It's not this K.
True. Actually, it comes from the fact that we already rescaled the coupling constant to have this dependence so as to have a proper large N expansion.
But is there more than just the rescaling of the coupling?
No, not here. But there are still N's in here, of course. Because when you perform the integral, then here you will have divergences and.
That's really OK. That's really the Feynman graph.
Yeah. I don't know, nothing by hand. Huh? Well, something like that. And also a prefactor depending on dimension or et cetera. So.
But I don't understand. I thought you said K was a regulator that you
would do. Oh, no. Oh, capital K. This is small K.
I'm talking about capital
K. Capital K, yeah. Is
I'm talking
about small K. Yeah, but I mean, for fixed tau, n is finite, huh? So, but I'm thinking at the tau to zero limit. So, I'm trying to collect.
K, is the capital K any function that reduces to a delta function?
Yeah. As it's written here. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a free. It's a. Yeah, you always have the choice to choose the regulator.
Except here, you're using the convolution.
Select. Yeah. Yes, I said it's it kernel. Huh? I mean, I can also choose a regulator which is not at all convenient for computation, but I'm not sure it's very smart. Okay, so what remains to be computed is a product over the faces, so the closed stranded path. And by the way, I will only consider closed graphs, namely without external edges. And here you have, so MF is the number of edges contributing to the face F, so the length of the face, if you want. And here is just an ordered product of group elements or inverses, and it's encoded in this matrix epsilon, which is just the incidence matrix of between face and edges. Okay, so you have oriented face and edges, and so it tells you if E belongs to the boundary of F and with coinciding or not orientations. Okay, so now from here, you notice that there is still a symmetry which acts, as you know, on the vertices, which is this one. You want to gauge it, so a way to do that is to so you pick up a tree in your graph and you impose that each element is one on this tree, so it basically fixes the symmetry. Then you use the small tau expansion of the heat kernel, and at the end you get what is displayed. So capital F is the free energy, and its leading contribution, so from graphs which diverge the most when tau goes to zero, is given by a sum over a particular class of graphs which are called melons, and I will describe them in a minute. Okay, so melon, here you have let's say the amplitude corresponding to a melon, and the amplitude is basically a determinant, and it's the determinant of essentially epsilon transpose. Okay, so this determinant we want to compute it. So the tilde is here because actually in L tilde you just delete the rows and columns corresponding to the tree, because we fixed the tree to one. Okay, so and this is what I want to compute. And so yeah, please.
You get all possible dimensions, it depends on the number of colors.
Yeah, true. D plus one colors, D complexes.
So once you fix the number of colors, is the dimension fixed? Yeah. You get a mixture.
No, it's fixed. Yeah. And also a normal pseudo manifold is a pure complex. So there is a really definite definition of dimension. Okay, so pure means that all the maximal simplices have the same dimension. So you can't have, for example, an edge attached to a triangle. Yeah, so this you can't have, sorry.
But they can be okay. And then how about multiplicity? If you get each pseudo manifold with the same number.
There is of course always a global permutation symmetry of the colors. It makes no sense, I mean, to be blue or red. And clearly, you can get the same pseudo manifold. I mean, it's the fact that you can.
I guess true. I guess I meant the same cell complex. I mean, of course, you could get the same pseudo manifold.
Yeah. But then.
Like
Well, but not only. I mean, here you don't classify Feynman diagrams by the dual complex or whatever. So, I don't know precisely.
If you give me a graph,
yeah.
Can you compute the distribution factor?
Oh yes, sure. Of course, yeah, I can do that.
But it's some complicated.
Well, it's always complicated symmetry factors.
except
here for melons, the symmetry factor is here. It's half of the number of vertices. Okay, but because those graphs which are here in this class are very, very particular. But okay.
But I mean, in effect, you're introducing a certain measure factor, a weighting of the different cell complexes. That always happens.
What?
If you just said let's sum over the cell complex, then you would have a different weight for the different terms in the expansion. So this is picking out a particular
Yeah, okay. So this is related to the one over n expansion of colored colored tensor models or whatever you want. And that's true. There is a weight for different triangulation of the same manifold. And so, for example, the sphere, in any dimension, the spheres are dominant, but certain particular triangulations of the sphere are dominant. But you have triangulation of the sphere at any subleading orders. Subleading orders. Yeah.
I think this question was even before that.
Ah.
It was about when you have finite diagrams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you multiply each evaluation by 1 over the symmetry factor.
Yeah.
So here you do the same.
But it's
so the
yeah.
evaluation has the summing of all diagram times 1 over the symmetry factor.
Yeah, but I mean the symmetry factor.
This is the measure of the reason. And then once you do that, it's done.
Well, it's. Yeah.
Saying you could put something else than 1 over the symmetry factor.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it depends. You can always rescale the coupling constant and then it changes. What never changes is the number of Wick contractions. This is the basic thing. Which makes everything works. Okay, so.
But the physics couldn't depend on the size of the symmetry factor or the way it could be. Are you saying it cannot?
Could or couldn't?
Yeah, the filter fixes it. But if they just started from, I just want to do some of the superficial complexes and cell complexes.
Ah, yeah, yeah. I mean, but. No, but okay, yeah. But I'm working specifically with a field theory to have a prescribed weight for those. Triangulations. Otherwise, then you can choose. Yeah, true. But no, I'm constrained.
I'm just trying to get a sense of what the weight was, but anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
It's just the number of layers of recolors.
Yeah, something like that. No, 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 no. Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean that.
Oh, yeah, there's the dynamical.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I said now. My task will be to compute this determinant for a graph belonging to this class, so a melon. So what is a melon? Well, they are colored graphs dual to very specific triangulations of the sphere in any dimension. Okay, so they are the dominant graphs and they are spheres. So they enjoy a nice recursive structure. So essentially a melonic graph are melons into melons. So this is a basic melon of color 0, you have to insert this into what Razvan calls a super melon. So here in dimension 3, it's just, I don't know where you can see. So it's colored, of course. Up. So now, if I insert this into the line of color 0 in here, then you get that with a bit of stretching. Okay, and now if I insert a melon of color 1 into this line, which is maybe color 1, then you get this one. Okay, and that's the recursive structure. You insert melons everywhere you want. Okay, and what is nice is that those insertions do not overlap. So behind this, you have a tree structure, and they are, in fact, in bijection, with rooted d plus 1 array trees, which I give examples here. So this is just basic thing, just one vertex and leaves. So as you can see, this is putting a 0 into essentially into this one, so just one edge, and here so you can imagine this is your super melon. You inserted here a 0 melon, okay? So that's this line, okay? And in the okay, I said this one. So anyway, if you insert it here, it's the same. It gives this one, okay? And so you have these three. So what you have to keep in mind is that if I want to describe a melon, I just have to see what is a colored d plus 1 array tree. So I pick a colored d plus 1 array tree, and I know what is the melon which corresponds. Okay, and what is nice with trees is that you can prune the leaves one by one to get a recursion. And that's really the point.
Can you say again how you get the tree from the melon?
Yeah, sure.
The melons in the red.
So everything has to be rooted, so you have to, anyway, choose a starting point, etc. So basic thing is this one over there. Well, the graph I drew on. There is a point. No, but it's just because. Just this one, huh? Oh, wait. This graph. You keep those graph, this graph there in mind? Well, okay. So the starting point is this. Okay? Okay? Yeah, that's the root of the tree. Then you want to insert this pattern in it in every possible way. So you have to choose a line, okay, in here, and insert it inside. Or change it, replace the line by this pattern. If I do this here, one step gives me this. After that, you have choices. You can insert here, which is, by the way, the same as here, or you can insert in any line here or here, but it's similar. Okay? And each time you have to choose a line, so you have to choose a color, and essentially putting a root on the graph and a root on the tree breaks the symmetry so that it's different to put it here or here. That's okay.
Should you start always with that melon?
Yeah. No, because this is the smallest the smallest colored graph possible. This is really the basic thing. And this is, by the way, a triangulation of the sphere, of the three sphere, with two tetrahedra. Okay? So it belongs to the same class. Okay. Okay, if you mean that the triangulation is the geometric realization of an abstract simplicial complex, no, it's not. But it's a delta complex. Okay. Okay, so now I describe a way to express this determinant in terms of a certain combinatorial species. So for this, I will first reformulate in a homological way what are trees in graphs. It just comes. Yeah. Depends on the dimension. Here. And it's also because you look at a small tau limit, so you stick to the Lie algebra. Yeah. True. Okay. So after rephrasing trees in terms of homology, then I define the generalization of trees. And I show you how they are related to the determinant I want to compute. So what is a spanning tree in a graph? This is a certain subgraph which is spanning, namely it has the same number of vertices as the ambient graph. It is a cyclic, it is connected, and its number of edges is precisely number of vertices minus one. So here you have a graph. I show you two trees. This is a tree. The graph has eight vertices. It has the tree has seven edges. It is clearly a cyclic and connected. And here is another example. Okay. So now the point is that we will see a graph. A property, which is that any two of the conditions, 2, 3, and 4, imply the third one. Okay, so we can just ask for connected and this number of edges, then it's necessary a cyclic or any way you want. Okay, so now look at a graph as a one complex. So one cell edges, zero cells vertices. You will call a subgraph spanning if it is a subcomplex which shares the zero skeleton. Okay, so it shares the vertices here with the ambient graph. And then you choose an orientation of the edges, and you get a chain complex, okay, which is here. And at that point, you can reformulate the condition 2, 3, and 4 in homological terms. So spanning, as I said, the same zero skeleton. A cyclic, well, that's clear. It's trivial first homology group because you have no two cells, so there are no boundaries. So H1 only contains cycles, so you ask for triviality because you want it to be a cyclic. Then here, I could have chosen H0 to be trivial, but I wanted to generalize to situation where when there is torsion. So anyway, here is the generator. So you just ask for the zeros Betti number to vanish. And maybe that would be a good idea to explain why it means connected for a graph. And just before that, you can just rephrase this counting argument in this way. So let me explain briefly why H0 vanishing means connected. So for this, I have to explain what is the D0 map, okay, from C0 to Z. So if I take alpha in C0 of G, this is a finite linear combination with integer coefficients of vertices. So this is just sum over I of ni vi, okay? And D0 of alpha is just sum over I of ni. Okay, so it clearly belongs to Z as long, it belongs to Z, and it's it's also surjective if there is at least one vertex. Okay, and so when does it vanish? Well, you must have the same number of plus and minus. Okay, so you can decompose this in pairs of vertices, maybe with repetition, pairs with opposite signs. Okay, so the basic cycles are actually. I should write it like that. Basic cycles are actually stuff like V0 minus V1. Okay? So now what does it mean to have a vanishing H0? It means that any cycle like this is a boundary, so it's related by a path. So any two points you choose, there is a path in between. So that's connected. Okay? And as I said, I re-say it, I could have chosen to impose H0 vanishing, or trivial, let's say, but then I would miss some more complicated situation. But yeah, it's really equivalent. Okay, so now I can generalize this in higher dimensions. And those persons did in 2009. So you take an n-dimensional cell complex, and you call a spanning K-tree, a subcomplex with the following. So it's a subcomplex of the K-skeleton. Right? You forget everything which is in dimension higher than K. Okay. So if you want a K-tree, so it has to share the K-1 skeleton of the ambient complex. It has to have vanishing Kth homology group, vanishing K-1 Betti numbers, and this number of K cells. And as in the one-dimensional case, any two of the conditions 2, 3, and 4 imply the third. And also, you know that a graph contains a spanning tree if and only if it is connected. Here it's the same. A cell complex contains a K-tree if and only if its K-1 Betti number is 0. Okay? F, it's the number of cells of the dimension D index. So it's the number of K cells in the subcomplex delta. It's the number of K cells in capital delta, etc.
In this literature, the notion of K3 has been defined for subcomplex in general, or
for cell complexes. There is a first paper of those guys, so a long paper when they applied the counting to different complexes like shifted complex, Cohen-Macaulay complexes, etc. So they define it for simplicial complexes. Then they have another paper where they do a great job, but there is the first part, which takes maybe 2 pages or 3 pages, where they essentially say, well, if I just repeat the same as before, changes cell into a simplicial into cell, everything works. Right? It's obvious because if you look at each proof, it's only written in homological terms. So. Yeah, but they. But they coincide on simplicial complexes. Well, I don't know precisely what you call a cell complex. I'm not speaking about. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. So let me give me two dimensional examples of two trees. So if you take a triangulation in a large sense of the two sphere and you just delete one two cell, then what you get is a two tree. So it's clearly a cyclic, and the boundary of the two cell you removed is actually the boundary of the rest of the remainder of the sphere. And also RP2 is a 2-tree, so by this I mean if you take any triangulation of RP2, this is itself a 2-tree. And if I would have chosen as a condition here HK minus 1 to be trivial, then RP2 wouldn't have had any tree, okay, any 2-tree. So that's really to include a situation with torsion. Okay, so now how this is related to my problem. So it's in the following way. So let me remind you what is the matrix trees theorem for graph. So you take a graph, see it as a one-dimensional complex, write its one boundary, and you form the following matrix. Number of vertices times number of vertices, so D1 times D1 transpose. You erase one line and one column corresponding to a vertex you fix, and whatever the vertex you choose, its determinant is the number of spanning trees in G. Okay? Now, in higher dimensions, there is a generalization of this, which is a bit more involved, but still, which is the following. So you take a delta complex of dimension n, you choose a k smaller than n, you ask that it is connected in dimension k minus 1 and k minus 2. It's the case Betti number. You want me to explain the tilde? So no, it's reduced homology. Yeah, the rank. Yeah, dimension of the free part. Yeah, true. So then you take this matrix, you erase. So this matrix has dimension the number of k minus 1 cells in capital delta. Okay, so now you erase lines and columns corresponding to a k minus 1 tree. A zero tree, by the way, is a vertex. So this is really a generalization of this expression. And what you get is a prefactor here times the sum over all the k trees of the square of the order of hk minus 1. And this is the number of elements, okay? And this is finite because I impose this condition. Okay? So u is a k minus 1 tree. Okay. K trees. So in the graph setting, this is one, this is one, this is one, and you get the number of one tree. But in general, this is not the case. And if you remember the expression I'd like to compute, we had a sum over two trees of, we had this factor inside. Okay. Well, so that's coherent. Okay. Oh, you see. So I remind you that I want to compute delta of L tilde. L tilde is L minus rows and columns corresponding to one tree. So we are in this situation. And where there's a weighting factor, but it's essentially not very important. And so, well, the first question would be to know how many two trees a given melon G contains. Okay, so now I try to speed up a bit, but it's essentially I show you what kind of strategy I can imagine to compute this and partial results. So it starts with a remark. The remark is in dimension 3, two trees in a complex are in bijection with one tree in the dual complex. So my aim now will be to count spanning one trees in the dual complex of three-dimensional melons. So for this, I use the top polynomial. It's multivariate version, let's say. So it's a polynomial in so there is one variable q, and one v variable per edge of capital G. So I write C of G for the number of connected components of capital G, and Z is defined as the sum over the spanning subgraphs of capital G, Q to the number of connected components of the subgraph, product over its edges. Okay? So from this, I define another polynomial, which is this limit. And because we're a bit short, I just tell you that, well, it's really obvious. I'll just look at the definition. And essentially, xg is the sum, if capital G is connected, it's just the sum over the spanning trees of G, product of the edges in the tree. Okay, so maybe I write it. But really, it comes from the definition. There is really nothing mysterious. So okay. So clearly, if I put all the variables to one, then I get the number of spanning trees. Okay, so the question is, can I compute this polynomial easier than the determinant? And I think yes. So I fix a three-dimensional melon. I call delta its associated cell complex. And I want to compute the x polynomial at one of the one skeleton of the dual complex. Okay. So for this, I will use extensively the recursive structures of melons. So I will start with a melon, which is a certain tree. And I want to compute x of this one skeleton in terms of x of the skeleton of the melon where I just prune a leaf. OK, so let me explain this. So for this, we are lucky because we have reduction relations for x. Capital X, and they are the following. So if E is a bridge, so a bridge is a one particle reducible line, okay? So it's a line when you dilate it, it increases the number of connected components. So if you have a bridge, you can compute X of G in terms of X of G, where E is contracted, at the price of putting a prefactor VE. If it's a loop, it's exactly the same as X of G minus E. Well, that's clear because there is no loop in a spanning tree. So you have no spanning tree with a loop. So that if there is a loop, I mean, it never appears in the polynomial. If E is ordinary, namely, if it's not a loop, neither a loop nor a bridge, then it can or it cannot be in a spanning tree. So you have this relation. And the, probably one of the most important one is if you have parallel edges, okay? you can have one in the tree, but not the other, and vice versa. And it amounts actually to change variables. So you take the simple graph where you replace parallel, those two parallel edges by a simple edge, and you just change variables into the sum. Okay? Yeah, but what I call loops is an edge where both ends are the same. It's for okay.
Two edges stuck together.
Yeah, yeah, but my yeah, you can have cycles of length too, so multiple edges or parallel edges. I don't know what you call it.
So E is not necessarily a single edge.
No. No. E is one edge, but it can be parallel to another.
In the second line.
Yeah. So E.
If E is a loop, what does that mean?
So this is a loop.
Yeah, I thought you said you excluded those in the beginning.
Yeah, but this is a polynomial which is defined for general graphs. But okay, I could have not mentioned it. I'm sorry. Okay, and this is crucial, and you see that this changes by variable. Well, okay, forget. So now, remember, this basic melon, which are, by the way, the leaves of my D plus one array tree, they correspond to three balls, which are made of the gluing of two tetrahedra along three facets. Okay? Then, if I look at the skeleton of this triangulation, it's this thing, okay? So now if I want to reduce my melon, so my melonic graph, by contracting this, namely replacing this picture by just a straight line, it amounts to go from this local one skeleton to this thing. Okay, and now I can use the all those reduction relations to compute x of this in terms of x of this. Okay? So you get this expression. Okay? So here, now I have the one skeleton of the dual of the graph where I contracted my melon n0, let's say. And note that this is not a recursion from the number of spanning trees, because the number of spanning trees is obtained by putting one everywhere here. But if I put one here, then I got twos at some places. Okay? So that's and sometimes this recursion, you can make it converge. So for example, here you have a certain melon, which is, in terms of tree, a monocolored branch. So let me maybe show you what is the picture. So this tree corresponds to just this situation, etc. Okay. So the number of two trees in this melon, if you have a k0 plus 1 melons in here, then it's this number. Okay. So I can do a bit better, but not much better. So if you have four monocolored branches, okay, then the number of
you just proved this theorem about this class of melons.
What do you mean?
If you just go back one slide, the number of two trees, oh, in this.
I mean, if you use the
prop. What is the meaning of that?
This is this one.
This is this one, right?
This is this graph, yeah. Okay, so this you should imagine that it's a colored graph with four colors. Here you have color zero, and each time you have one, two, three. Zero, one, two, three. So this, yes, this is a D complex, and the number of two trees, so I have definitions, etc. It's the same as the number of one trees in the dual complex. And I compute.
So you want to dualize this.
Yeah.
Highlights a point, and then he counts the number of maximum trees
yeah.
in this dual
yeah. yeah. True. So I can do that for this simple situation. I can do that for a bit more complicated, but still essentially monocolored in.
So
in
this
a,
is the tree complex. In your, I mean, after you.
Yeah, yeah, a tree complex. Yeah.
Trees,
yeah, inside the tree complex. Complex. Yeah. So you have a melon which is a three sphere. You look at its two skeleton, and inside of these two skeleton, you must choose a two tree. So. A spanning set of two cells which do not form closed surfaces. Okay, so this is slightly more complicated. You see, it's given in terms of symmetric polynomials here in the case, the different parameters. So essentially, that's the most complicated situation I can do with that for the moment. So let me summarize. So we've seen that K-trees are k-dimensional generalization of trees, spanning trees. Such combinatorial objects appear in the Feynman amplitudes of GFT. Here, colored GFT, but they would appear also in the uncurled world. And their enumeration clearly will help to understand the critical behavior, critical UV behavior of the model. But of course, we are far from understanding everything. So first, we need complete enumeration, and it's not an easy task. So, for example, James Ryan, he computed the case of the bicolored branch, so 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. And look at that. You know, it's a simple prefactor, so it's a 3 to a certain power times a polynomial. Here it's the same, 3 to a certain power times a polynomial. If you look at the expression for the bicolored branch, it's this. And it's clearly not of this form. So there's really something to understand, and I'm not really able to reproduce that. Hmm? Okay, then on a more mathematical side, I'd like to count K trees in dimension D. So there are polynomials which should allow me to do that. And then I haven't explained to you, but the two trees in Mellons, they are torsion free. Okay, but that's it's proven with a very specific argument, not very easily generalizable. So one would like to count in the case of torsion full trees, and that's way more complicated. Torsion in the sense that you remember that the determinant, essentially, it sums over 3 over k minus 1 squared. Hmm? There are, torsion means this is non-zero. This is what I mean. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to sum over k trees, OK? And in dimension k minus 1, they may have torsion. OK? In Mellons, they don't. In dimension 2, yeah.
Means HK minus
2 means 0. No, k minus 1.
But if it's 0, then
no, 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 no. This is not 0. It's beta k minus 1, which is 0. It means precisely that the free part is 0 and that HK minus 1 is a finite group. But it may not be trivial. Mm-hmm. OK, so torsion means HK minus 1 not trivial. In our situation, it is. But there are situations where it's not. And it would be interesting to understand when it is, when it's not, and if we are even able to enumerate them, even in the case of torsion. And also to go beyond melons. So for example, we can, after melons, we can consider cherry trees. So cherry trees are the so cherry trees, they are the class of graphs which are which contribute to the double scaling limit of certain tensor models. And they are still spheres, but more complicated triangulations of the sphere. So maybe, but still there's work. OK, thank you.
Okay, that's
this formula for A of G.
Sure.
This is the bottom line. So here, the beginning was because you say you limited the large n as something to this determinant of n, this determinant of electric kind of thing. The question I have is whether this relation is true only for the manons or is true in general. So what I mean by that is that suppose you take your sum of Feynman diagrams, and then you subtract all the manons.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
So then is the next order, there's some, I mean, is it always true that somehow in the large n means the evaluation of the graph is given by this formula of delta n?
No, so there is, I think, in Feynman, the formula is valid for a class of graphs that is more general than that.
Yeah.
You need simple connectivity. Simple connectivity. Because this is how you go in the tau.
Ah.
So most of the formulas, including the three extensions, are remain valid for simply connected graphs, not necessarily valid. If you remove this hypothesis, it's a bit more tricky.
Does it matter here? The connection seems to be clear.
Yeah, because I put something under the red.
So it's not interesting, it's interesting. No.
So I have some questions on the physical background. I'm not sure I understood. First, I think Laurent just said, but the question why you're interested in counting these trees and generalized, it's in order to compute determinants. That's the basic reason, or if you could count them all?
No, it's
you
also...
Would plug into this matrix G theorem and get a determinant, or is there some other reason?
No, I mean, the reason essentially is to compute the critical exponent of the leading, of the large N expansion of the theory.
It's not because it's related to a determinant? Then?
No.
So why did you show us this matrix?
Because if I give you the determinant, you may not know that it's related to trees.
Yeah.
I try to know how to compute trees, but I try to avoid to compute the determinant.
So isn't that what I just said? You want to compute the determinant.
Yeah. But I mean, the aim of the game is not to compute the determinant. The aim of the game is to compute the amplitude.
Yes, I know, but the determinant is a factor.
Yeah, true.
Okay, so the second is even more basic question, which is when you say leading divergence, leading in what parameter?
1 over tau. Tau is my
regulator.
Yeah, it's my UV cutoff. Okay. Yeah, okay. I don't want to enter into that debate, but it's for renormalization purposes, it's called UV.
Is it governing the number of complexes that arise?
No. It tells you that, the graphs which contribute to the which are the most divergent are certain triangulations of the sphere. Those triangulations of the sphere, we call them melon.
Yeah.
There are melons.
Is the size of the melon related to tau at all?
No, not at all.
Then how do we understand what it means to take tau to zero?
But,
physically, what is it telling us?
But that's exactly the same situation in quantum field theory. In usual quantum field theory, you have a divergence, but it does not depend for just renormalizable theory. It does not depend on the number of vertices. It just tells you it diverges like this or that, depending on the number of external edges. So,
this question is related to the amount of the regulator. What you're saying is correct. Like raising is
thank you.
The regulator doesn't control the number of
vertices, yeah.
But there is also associated to the regulator the notion of the locality, which is that, you know, that.
Yes. Ah,
he's asking,
I see,
this regulator, which is here appearing as a trick, is, you know,
okay.
It's telling us to leave out mode.
Ah, okay, so I will tell you. So the replacement of locality in this type of models, so now you look at graphs or let's say complexes with boundary. So all the complexes which have the same divergence, degree of divergence, they have the same triangulation of the boundary.
What does that say about the question?
I mean, if from a renormalization group point of view, locality is the structure of divergence.
That we could think of it as the number of simplexes or cells on the boundary?
Yeah.
Is that the right?
Yeah, but more than that, not only the number
like
of cells. Yes, but
so
not only
the.
Yeah. Exactly. There is a fixed number of complexes which appears as the boundary of the leading divergent graphs. Right.
Here, depending on the culture, there's two notions of locality hashing. So if you are, you know, let's say in the Kabangia, think of locality as, you know, big manifold. So that's the one you're talking about. And then, you know, if you're a field theorist, you think about locality in terms of what happens in finite complexity. Okay, that's another notion of locality. But in usual field theory, we understand the relationship between these two notions of locality.
But they coincide.
GFT, I would say one of the biggest problems is that, you know, there's a well-defined understanding of locality and normalization in the GFT point of view, but the question is not answered. What does that tell us from the GRT? And that's,
Moreover, it seems that from the point of view of, let's say, loop quantum gravity or spin form community, the GR is directed from infrared to UV, which is quite disturbing. But still, that's the way it works.
But it's a central question.
I would like to understand physically what it means to encode a particular value.
Yeah, but if you
if
find it, let us know. Yeah.
Whereas you take, you know, taking another point of view.
Well, I think we should know. Would like
yeah,
to.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah, true. No, that's a very interesting question, but I don't have the answer, to be clear.
So let's thank our speaker
again.
Thank
you.